Gresh and Rich Keefe. This is Gresh and Keefe on EEI.
Line drive, base hit into right field, through the hole, Renfro charging. Torre is coming around and he's going to score. The throw goes to third, it gets away from Devers and goes into the Philadelphia dugout. So two runs will score on the play. 3-2 with two outs, the runners will be on the move. The payoff pitch, swing at a high fly ball to left. Way back toward the monster seats and over the blood. A weekend for Torre, a three-run homer.
Swing and a chopper to the right side. It is backhanded by the first baseman, Hoskins. He flips to first, covering is Suarez, and the ball game is over. 5-4 Phillies win this one.
That's how the first half of the Major League Baseball season ended for the Red Sox. 12:06, the lunchtime hour of Gresh and Keefe begins now. Red Sox with a shocking record for the, it's not like exact first half of the year, but the All-Star break always represents that. The Red Sox wrap up the first half with a game and a half lead in the AL East. They are 55-36 on the year. And as we start to look at the rest of the way in terms of this baseball season, Keith, I see Toronto 8 games back. I see the Yankees 8 games back. And even though they swept the Red Sox on the opening weekend, you were prophetic in saying, just wait, the Baltimore Orioles stink. They are 28-61, so you nailed the bottom, but neither of us nailed the top.
No, not even close, but I'll tell you what, that one guy, and he knows who he is, who texted in after that first series
you
and said, come on,
bitch,
Keith,
you.
The Orioles are a lot better than you think.
Nope.
You're not giving them any credit. They're
haven't
awful.
Heard from him.
They're the worst team in the American League, and it's by far. But no, the Red Sox have definitely been a surprise. Now, kind of takes some of the luster out. They lose 4 out of 5 going into the break.
Yep.
And you thought, all right, well, they got a pretty comfortable lead. Well, it's a game and a half right now over the Rays, who are still the top wild card team, and so all that. So, I mean, you're in a great spot. Don't get me wrong, but losing 2 out of 3 to the Phillies after losing 2 out of 3 to the Angels, you're saying, all right, well, this isn't ideal, but maybe this time I take a little bit of a break, a little bit of a reset. You know, you got the trade deadline coming up in a couple of weeks. See what Chaim Bloom has up his sleeve for that. But overall, I mean, they are in a great spot. Hard to complain.
I know we're at the All-Star break. I know we're going to get into Home Run Derby tonight because there might be a little juice in this one in terms of having Ohtani there. But I wonder if this All-Star game couple of days will serve as the catalyst for deals starting to get done. Because I'll be honest, I thought we would have seen a bigger move made by a contender by now. There's always that one team
right
that gets out in front of everybody else, and we haven't seen that yet. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised.
No, we haven't. It's been pretty quiet. And again, it's the 30th this year, right? So it's 2 weeks from Friday.
Okay.
And so maybe you'll see, maybe next week is where you'll see the deal. Because usually there's one or two relatively big deals, I feel like, prior to deadline day. And then deadline day, that's when you get all those middle relievers and all those things end up happening.
Well, but that's the thing. Yeah. Like, what's going to be the first big domino to fall? Because there will be, you got to figure that the first move is probably going to be a big one.
Well, you keep hearing guys like Craig Kimbrell, who is having a great year. I know mm-hmm. a lot of people kind of forgot about him because he was bad his last year, then he was terrible, but he's really good again.
The Cubs are having a down year.
Yeah, the Cubs are bad, and then it's probably they are going to trade Anthony Rizzo and Craig Kimbrell. I know there was the Max Scherzer rumors, and you know, because Washington's not going anywhere. You know, we pulled up the standings last week. There are a lot of teams already out of it. There's a bunch of teams, even with that extra wild card team.
Right.
I mean, close to half of baseball, you would think, could right now be honest sellers at the deadline.
Is Rizzo toast? Mm. I wonder.
Another typical cash giveaway. Here's this hour's code word on WEEI.
This hour's code word is RUN, R-U-N. Text RUN to 72881 now for your chance to win $1,000 at our national cash contest. Message and data rates apply. Don't text and drive. Text RUN to 72881 for your chance at $1,000. One more chance with us coming up an hour from now. And it is Shime's birthday.
Yes, it
today
is. Happy birthday, Shime.
That's right.
Thanks, guys.
Shime is a big 29 years old. Ooh. First birthday as a homeowner.
That's right.
And apparently he got a little delivery
is
there,
that right?
Keith.
How
yeah, apparently it smells like spicy chicken sandwich in there. That's
Are
right.
you loving it in there, Shime?
Big shout out to the real David Ortiz.
The real David Ortiz. Sending
Not the other David Ortiz.
No, this is fake David Ortiz.
No, this is real David Ortiz.
Twitch, well, now he's Shime's he's calling him real now because he sent him food.
He sent Shime food. It's the real Ortiz.
That's as real as it gets.
That's pretty good.
What, do you get a couple things off the dollar menu?
I know, he got me one of the crispy, juicy, tender, spicy chicken sandies.
Well, Shime does such a good job selling them. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world.
Well, earlier when he had an orgasmic by McDonald's.
I mean, how can not? Just thinking about it was making me drool a little
You
bit.
Should be the face of that sandwich.
McDonald's, if you're listening, let me know. I'm available.
He should be.
You're shaped like one. You put a bun on you, a little bun on the bottom. There you go. And
they need to get more characters back, like the Hamburglar and Grimace. Like, these guys were great.
Did they get canceled, too?
I haven't seen them in
a
while.
Can't have a purple burger eater roaming Earth. I guess that's a bad
Grimace
thing. Grimace?
I haven't seen Grimace
in a while. The Hamburglar, is he too dastardly?
Hamburglar.
Grimace had some comments about the Iraq War.
Is that what it was?
Oh, I got you.
Got him in some hot water.
Yeah. He didn't rip Elvis. Though, did he? Like you did earlier in Catching Hell or anything like that?
John Rippin' Elvis.
Yeah, Rippin' Elvis. Who would have thought?
Rest in peace?
Maybe? Who would have thought that John referencing a dead singer
dead.
From, is it like Tupac now?
Yeah, some people think
Him and Tupac are on the moon with JFK.
Yeah. Yeah. So this guy, he died in the mid-70s on a toilet.
Yeah.
John ripped him, and some guy was like,
might be my biological grandfather.
Woke Anderson for making a mid-70s reference.
What are you going to do?
I mean, good Lord Almighty.
What are you going to do?
Anyway,
world.
It is. Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
Is he toast?
I don't know.
I'm looking at the numbers right now, and he's hitting .247. With
how many ya-ya ding-dongs?
Only 10.
10 ya-ya ding-dongs.
Last year, 11 in 58 games. This year, 10 in ya-ya 79.
Well, I guess it comes down to this. He's not all-star Anthony Rizzo anymore, but is he better than Bobby Dalbec? I say yes.
Now you're going down. Okay. Yeah. And last year of his deal.
Yeah, so that's the kind of guy that's going to get moved for sure. Now, where do you stand on bringing back Craig Kimbrell? Because there's a lot of hubbub about that. Like, the Red Sox are one of the teams that he could get dealt to. And I saw a Buster Olney tweet, which just actually kind of made sense. He said the Matt Barnes early deal kind of allows them to go after Craig Kimbrell. And regardless of what Matt Barnes' role is going forward, he already knows how much money he's making.
So basically it's a... He's under contract and he's amenable. Like, he does that, like, meaning Matt Barnes.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be the closer per se.
Right.
Whereas with Kimbrell, if you get him, you know he's only good for three outs and it's only in the ninth inning.
Right. But and then so he's also not worried about like, oh man, I could have cashed in had I gotten a 40 save season or whatever, but now I'm the setup man, so I'm not gonna have a chance to make as much money. And so I don't know. Cause I just wonder how that throws off the dynamic. I don't think they need a reliever. I think it's one of the few times a competitive team has not needed an extra arm. There's six guys back there that if they go to, you're like, all right, I like their chances. And then, oh, by the way, come playoff time, they're probably going to throw one of those starters in there, too. It's like, how many relievers do you need?
Well, that's what I was going to say is if Sale wasn't coming back and you only had the prospect of Tanner Houck joining the rotation,
maybe different.
Then maybe you'd feel differently. But with Sale, it's going to kick somebody back. So you're right. There isn't – you could go that route. I lean more towards you. I don't think you need Kimbrell. Like, if you're going to say, who would you want off of the Cubs – I would probably lean more towards Rizzo in hoping that you bring him to Fenway Park and the guy can reignite the bat.
You could do one deal, get them both.
But do you need Kimbrell, though?
I don't think you need him. I really don't. I honestly
don't
think
you need him. Does it make them a World Series winner if they get him? Maybe that might be the better question to ask. Is that a move that definitely puts them over the top, considering you have to use Kimbrell in only save situations?
Yeah, and I mean, I know he's better now, and he's having a great year. I think his ERA is, last time I checked, it was like less than a run. Like he's having a great season, but I just don't think you need it. And I wonder right now, Cora's hitting all the right buttons with that bullpen, and those guys seem to all have kind of the role. Or we know what Barnes' role is. We kind of know what Ottavino's role is. Those other guys, you kind of mix and matches. They've all been good. So does Kimbrell throw that off? It's almost like, remember when they brought in Eric Gagne? Like, hey, Eric Gagne's here. It's like, what?
How does he fit?
He ended up sucking. It threw everybody else off. They ended up they didn't even use him as a closer. They were supposed to, but it just like upset the whole bullpen. And like, it didn't work. It didn't have the desired effect. And he was bad. And I'm not saying Kimbrel's necessarily going to be bad, but I wonder if these guys, would that negatively impact Barnes? And then is there a trickle-down effect? I don't think they need him.
I'm with you. I don't think they need him. Now, if the Cubs are willing to liquidate assets for very little, then okay, right, you can right. have that. Because it's better to hoard them than not. Because I'm just trying to think, is there a team in the American League out there that would really benefit from maybe getting someone like Craig Kimbrel? And if you are now starting to think about making the World Series, and if you're a Heim Bloom, you have every reason to start to think that way, what would Kimbrel mean to another team if he went to a contender in the American League? That'd right. be my only hang-up in terms of maybe trying to hoard the guy, or in the next couple of weeks you end up getting an injury,
right.
and then it necessitates you making a move. But I'm kind of with you right now that I don't – Kimbrel is a – it would be a want, not a need.
And now Kimbrel is making $16 million this year. Obviously, you would cut that in half. Next year, it's a team option.
So basically, they can get rid of him, too, if they wanted to.
Yeah, it says the option guarantees with 110 games finished total in 20 and 21, 55 games finished in 21, and Kimbrel stays healthy. So, again, that team option might kick in. What did I just say? 55 games finished. And right now on the season, he has 29. So again,
so now you got to manage that number. We've seen that before.
That's weird, right? So you bring him in, you're like, hey, you're the closer, but you've now finished 55 games or 54 games, so now you're the setup guy. Like, so that one's a little dicey because I don't think you would want him for $16 million next year. It is nuts.
Hell no.
His last year in Boston, he had a respectable ERA, 2018, 2.74. But we all remember in the playoffs, he was not very reliable.
Correct.
Kimbrel started to be bad in 18. Then in 19 and 20, he was atrocious. Hurt, but also atrocious. And then this year, 0.57 ERA, 54 strikeouts in 31 and two-thirds innings, and he has 20 saves. Like, what? He's back to being... This is one of his best seasons.
Right.
So, I still think he has value, but again, if I'm the Red Sox, I think you're good on bullpen. Barring somebody getting hurt in the next 2 weeks, I think you're good.
And don't you think somebody will be willing to pay more than what the Red Sox would to be able to get
probably.
In?
Probably.
That's another issue on that as well. The 401 says, Rich, don't forget about Andrews. He blows.
Andrews sucks, but under what scenario would Andrews pitch in a must-win game?
Right. If you're bringing Kimbrel, everybody slides up. So maybe that bumps Andrews, but then, you know, it's the whole who goes into that spot. And there's got to be the one guy who, we're down 8-0. Who are we putting in? Hey, Matt, come on.
Or Garrett Richards at that point, because he'll probably be pitching long relief or whatever at that point.
There you go.
Because if Sale or Houck, it's not like you're counting on one guy. There's two guys that might take a starting spot and then bump somebody in there.
Let's go to Rob and Swamska with Gresh and Keith talking Red Sox. Rob, go ahead.
You guys hear me all right?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, so really who we should be, Heim Bloom should be focusing his attention on one and only one Cub, and that is Rizzo, because Rizzo fills the inconsistent hole that the Sox have had at first base. Dalbec's been good, but he's been hot and cold. Rizzo makes all that go away, and now you bring Dalbec in off the bench. He's the one that you need off that team. Everybody else is a nice to have, but he plugs a legitimate hole.
Well, I don't know if Rob said Dalbec or Dalbec.
He circled back and said Dalbec.
I think so.
Thanks, Rob. Like Rizzo more than Dalbec. Rizzo's not as good as he was a couple of years ago, but he's still also a gold glove fielder. So you automatically upgrade your defense. And I think he's a better hitter than Dalbec, even with the drop-off that he's had. You'd rather have him in there.
And he's in a hitter's ballpark.
I'd take him.
Where he's heading into free agency. So you bring him here and he has a great 2 months. He sets up his next contract. Or maybe the Red Sox do with him like they did with Steve Pierce, except they'd have a real first baseman and someone that they might be able to bank on,
and
if
maybe,
they did go get Rizzo.
Maybe one of those guys like, all right, is he washed or is he just playing on a bad team now? And he's like, eh. Like, there's that possibility,
he's
right?
He's 31, right?
And he's like, all right, we're not going anywhere this year. And he was also bad last year, but again, it was a weird, look at J.D. Martinez. You know, like the last time they had real baseball, Rizzo was pretty good. And now maybe you get him to a spot like Fenway, maybe that rejuvenates him a bit.
See, that's what I would be banking on, is that at Fenway Park, he would be able to kind of find the stroke a little bit And he wouldn't have to be a middle of the lineup hitter per se.
No, not
you
at all.
Want him to be, obviously.
He can hit seventh or eighth or ninth, for God's sake.
Lengthens the lineup, which this team needs, considering the bottom of the lineup hasn't been very productive at times this year. It is Shime's birthday, everyone, so make sure you send him his love at ShimeTime on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at Gresh Keith. Tell Shime happy birthday in the old Twitch chat and via the text 37937. So this is fantastic. Headline, Boston Globe over the weekend. Dave Dombrowski doesn't agree that he strip-mined the Red Sox to win a title.
We did get Cashner.
Well, I mean, they had one of the best farm systems when he got here and then one of the worst when he left. So what does that mean? But I know you think I don't like Dombrowski. The reality is, you bring him in, you know exactly what you're getting.
I completely agree with you on that. He didn't come here to reinvent himself. No. He came here to run teams the way he's run them in the past, which is spend money, mm-hmm. trade prospects, and then go win and then leave.
Spend a ton of money on free agency,
that's right.
which he did, and then trade away a bunch of prospects. Now, a lot of the prospects haven't really bit them. You know, it wasn't the case of that, but it was just other players you could maybe trade for. Did you maximize that? And then some of the bad contracts when you left. Like, I think Sale and Eovaldi might have been worse. And but that's also John Henry at some point, like above them.
Of course.
When you're talking about whether you're going to re-sign Mookie Betts or not at close to $400 million, that's more than even the president of baseball operations can handle. But to say you didn't trade away the farm system, I mean, it's just true. Like, when you first got here, it was loaded, but then you had to make deals for guys like Craig Kimbrell, like Chris Sale. They were going to cost a lot of prospects. Then there were some other minor deals along the way that you also shipped out some guys. But for all the baseball diehards out there that follow the farm systems everywhere, it's just a reality. When you got here, it was maybe either the best in baseball or close to it, and when you left, it was at the bottom.
Correct.
So that's it. But you won a World Series. So I don't think people should be all that upset about it, because that's what the goal was.
Yeah, and I know that there is a resistance to wanting to criticize the owner of the Red Sox and all this, but John Henry changes his mind philosophically the way people change their underwear.
Right.
It was, remember when Theo got here and eventually got the power after the whole struggle with Lucchino? It was, what was that line? It was, we're going to become a player development machine. Not really.
Theo was here, they drafted all those guys.
They were. They were to a point, and then even they started to make trades. Like, you went and brought in Schilling and stuff like that.
You had to.
But there comes an end of that in terms of becoming the player development machine, you're trying to keep up with the Joneses, so
to speak. Yeah, and I don't think Boston has as much to complain about as, say, Detroit. Dombrowski was in Detroit longer,
yep.
signed worse contracts, traded away everybody, and they didn't win.
That's right.
So at least with the Red Sox, all right, he was here for a short time, and you got what you wanted. You turned things around, and you were able to, because that's the other thing with the Red Sox. They've yo-yoed so much over the last two decades.
And then
worst place.
And I think a part of the reason is because of the indecisiveness of the philosophy of the owner. It has not been consistent all the way through. Now, look. You put, four championship rings on your finger or whatever it
is. Pretty good.
There are a lot of people that aren't going to complain. So maybe the Red Sox are more right than wrong. But to the point about feeling like you've bottomed out at times, there have been a couple of times under the John Henry tenure. And I respect him on the whole, you're looking to reset, because baseball has now gotten to the point to where if you're a big market team, you're going to have to reset every once in a while because you just don't have that much money. You have money, you can do it, but you need to reset. Even the Yankees did, and their network is worth a hell of a lot more than Nesson in terms of just the sheer value to the organization and that being an ATM machine that you can withdraw from. The big market teams have to do
true.
It now.
I do think one of the criticisms that Dombrowski gets, and I think you'd have to admit it is pretty fair, is if David Price was the highest or was the best free agent the year that Dombrowski was here.
Yes.
And he gave him the most money.
Mm-hmm.
No real skill to that.
None.
You just, the Cardinals are offering you this, we'll offer this.
Right.
Okay. And then with Kimbrell, you say, all right, did you have to give up four prospects? Not that any of them ended up being these great players, but you're like, you gave up a lot for him. Or You know, Chris Sale, you gave up a lot for, but like overspending and then just trading all these guys that you never drafted anyway. You inherited, you know, Manuel Margot and Yoan Moncada, and you inherited all those guys, and then you just traded them away. But again, the World Series kind of trumps everything.
And I know that there are some who are saying, well, Detroit won too. Yeah.
No, they didn't.
And they're, well, it's the whole, didn't he get one when he was out there in,
I don't think so.
And I thought he got one in Detroit whenever he was out there. And but look at the way, well, look at the way he ran that organization, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it, I'll go get Miguel Cabrera. Okay.
Yeah, but they didn't win.
They didn't win?
I don't think
so. Did they
so.
Go to a World Series?
Yeah, I know they went to one, right? But they lost.
I thought.
We can look it up.
Yeah, yeah, we can check that out.
We can fact check that.
But did Dombo tear the organization down from a prospect standpoint?
Could you do me a favor, guys, in the other room? Could you look this up?
Absolutely. But it worked.
So wait, Dombrowski was in Detroit, let's see, from 02 to 15.
Wow, I didn't realize that he was there 13 years.
From 02 to 15.
God dang.
So that's what I'm saying. He was there a long time.
I knew he was there a long time.
And let's see. Did they ever win the World Series? No.
They made one or two?
They lost in 06 and they lost in 12.
Okay.
They made two, but they never won.
All right, so there you go.
And
so
they only made the playoffs.
So that's where I got it wrong.
They made the playoffs 5 years out of those 13 we just said.
Right.
So, no.
Well, when he got there, they weren't very good, you see. And then when he couldn't build up the organization, then he started spending all that Illich money.
Right. They did win the World Series in 84, but that was just before he
got
there.
Well, that's right, yeah. Well, Alan Trammell was making no money back then, so Dombo didn't have an issue with him. So they end up going twice.
They went twice,
and
they got swept 1 year and lost in five the other. So, okay.
A gentleman's sweep and a straight sweep.
Remember that one series was the series where the pitchers had like 100 errors? Like all their pitchers like couldn't throw to bases all of a sudden, and they were just falling all over themselves. It was like, it was terrible.
Doesn't it make you wonder how that happens? Like when you played the game that long.
And you just lose it.
And
like
you
the
lose
basic
it.
Fundamentals.
Exactly. And that's not even like a Steve Sachs or Mackie Sasser thing where it's in your head. It's just.
They were just all over the place. That was one of the Giants titles, I think. They were just throwing it all over the place.
Oh, that's right. They got victimized by the Giants once. There as well, who by the way are pretty good this year. Once again, Giants.
Yeah, they're like the Red Sox of the National League.
That's
nobody thought they were going to be any good, and now they're killing it.
A lot of long plane rides coming up, maybe in October for Will Fleming and crew heading all the way out to San Francisco. Maybe they'll send Scheim on one of those. Oh, I saw Donuts Carrero. By the way, have you met old Nate? Who works in the Red Sox booth?
No,
he was
one
of my interns in Providence. They call him Joe.
Donuts.
Joe, I think, calls him Donuts.
Nice.
He was in doing whatnot before the Greg Hill show.
He was doing Curtis's job this morning.
It was good to have a sports person in that role.
He was here.
Oh.
Apparently, they were talking junk about me, I guess, along the way. Curtis and Ken or something.
Oh, yeah. You'll hear it during You Got Something. It was
really?
Impeccable impression of Gresh, I will say.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well.
We'll see.
Yeah, you're right. We will see. Here's Scheim, the birthday boy. We're trending.
Yeah, it's my birthday!
Like the show? Of course you do.
I hate this guy.
Tell a friend about Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
From the wonderful world of sports, we bring you Home Run Derby, where each week the leading home run hitters of the major leagues will compete in a home run hitting contest.
Hi there, everybody. I'm Mark Scott saying welcome to Home Run Derby. This week we have two of the greatest stars in all of baseball, that fence-busting switch hitter, Mickey Mantle, and the wondrous Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays. Well, Mickey, come on in. Welcome to Home Run Derby.
Thank you, Mark.
How are you going to hit today?
I'm going to hit right-handed today, Mark.
He'd have said like crap. That would have been the greatest answer back
not great.
In
pretty hungover.
1959. That's right. That's from the old Home Run Derby. Mark Scott, God rest. I think he died like 5 or 6 years after doing Home Run Derby or something. He didn't live much longer after doing what was one of the staples of ESPN Classic for a period of time.
But he lives on forever in a way.
Well, he does because... Yeah. I mean,
hell, we're talking about him right now.
Really, the Gary Tangway of that situation there. He'll live forever. Cockroach.
He's in Chappaquiddick.
Hey, he could be swimming in Chappaquiddick for all we know. Maybe that's how the guy checked out. Home Run Derby is tonight.
They're
doing a bracket of eight. Now, let's just do a quick aside, okay?
Okay, I like brackets.
I know you do.
I like brackets.
However, would a modern version of the old version of Home Run Derby right? So say you got whomever, yep. Okay? The Gary Tangway of baseball. Who would it be now? Not Jim Leland, but Brian Kenny.
It'd be Brian Kenny.
Brian Kenny, right? So of MLB Network.
I don't know if I'm tooted in for that.
Right? So it's Brian Kenny, and instead of doing Home Run Derby the way they did, you do it as individual TV shows the way they used to. So it would be Ohtani against, say, I don't know.
Juan Soto tonight?
Like Juan Soto, right? But it would be... But you
in an
do
empty
them in
ballpark?
Well, you can tweak it a little bit to be able to make it work. You might be able to put some fans in there. You go to like a spring training site and have all those oldsters roll in. And I don't love it. And there you go.
I don't love that idea. I think what makes the Home Run Derby is two things. One, you need the star. You need the guy or two that you really, really want to see.
Okay.
But also the ballpark. I think some of the boring cookie cutter ballparks. Yes, that's why Fenway Park was cool. Because you saw them doing it in a different place. When they first went to Camden Yards and they could try to aim for the warehouse out there, I think the setting really makes it. If it's just a generic park and they're just socking 350, 400 feet dingers, like, okay, I need something a little bit different to see how they attack a certain stadium. So tonight, you're like, okay, Coors Field, fine. Shohei Ohtani's it, though.
Supposedly, the balls are not going to be coming from the humidor. That was one of the reports that I read, because the humidor balls had supposedly normalized that ballpark a little bit. We know they want,
we know they want to fly.
Right, exactly.
Juice everything up. The bats, the balls, the players, whatever you want. That's the whole point of this
thing. Is it really Ohtani that is the show tonight?
That's it. Not even a close second for anybody.
Do you care about him maybe meeting Pete Alonso, the defending champion, in the semifinals?
Doesn't matter to me. That'd be cool. I think Pete Alonso. See, that's the thing is there's a pretty big drop off if you're talking about, you know, casual fans.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball fans know all the guys that are in it, but the casual fan, it's Shohei Ohtani. And whereas before, and not to do the old baseball was better when I was watching or when I was a kid game, but when Mark McGwire or Ken Griffey Jr. or Sammy Sosa or those guys are digging in the Home Run Derby, a little bit different and easy to bring in the casuals. Easy to bring, like, oh, all right, let's see what this guy's doing. This guy was hitting 60, 70 home runs in the regular season. Now he's just taking batting practice. I'll watch that. Where some of these other guys, it's really hard to have that appeal.
Yeah, I'm not excited about Juan Soto being in this.
No, I don't think anybody is.
Like, you know, Joey Gallo, nice player. Yeah, 24 bombs.
I think
great.
He's the favorite to win it, too, by the way.
Oh, Gallo is, really?
I think Gallo is. He's the betting favorite.
We'll have to get the Shime on that. We'll have to get a little birthday Shime's
money
wager.
Money man here.
Yeah. Like Trevor Story is in this. Matt Olson.
Yeah, no.
Trey Mancini. There's just nobody. You're right. There's no other than Pete Alonso and even a lot. I mean, 17 homers, not a bad year, don't get me wrong, but he isn't exactly ripping the cover off the ball.
Oh, I'm saying Ohtani's the favorite. I thought I read a thing that said Gallo was, but I guess Ohtani is the favorite.
Ohtani's currently the favorite at plus 290. Joey Gallo second at plus 450.
Oh, okay.
Well, I would have thought Shime didn't. Wouldn't you have thought that, and maybe there's just not enough action on it, I don't know. You think that Ohtani's odds would be a little skinnier than that? Like, you bet 100 and win 290 if he wins it?
I just think the...
It's tough, though.
The Home Run Derby's kind of like a mess. I forget who tweeted it out earlier, but, like, all of the guys heading into the All-Star break that are leading the league in home runs, only three of the last, I want to say eight, have actually won the Home Run Derby. So it's kind of really up in the air when it comes to the Derby. It's not necessarily just the guy that's mashing the most.
It's the dude who is also throwing the ball to you as well, right? Like, some of these guys are very particular. They bring their own sort of batting practice guy.
So I have the 10 most watched Home Run Derbies of all time.
Oh, my God.
10 most watched. So will this Home Run Derby approach the other Home Run Derbies?
Will it beat Game 1 in the NBA Finals?
So they're all kind of modern Home Run Derbies. They're all, the oldest one is 2002.
That
as far as how many millions of people watched.
Was that the Hamilton year or was he 03?
No, 2002 was Jason Giambi at Miller Park. That was the winner anyway.
God.
So 2008, when Justin Morneau won at Yankee Stadium, 9.1 million people. Now, I believe that was also the year that Josh Hamilton went crazy, because Josh Hamilton didn't win it that year.
That's right. He hit 28 and then petered out after that. 28!
He hit 35 total. Morneau hit 22 total, but in the finals, Morneau hit 5 and Hamilton hit 3. So he hit 28 in round one, so that was the most watched one. Now,
so he would have won aggregate? Is that like in soccer?
Yes, so then I think they changed the rules. Like, they've had a hard time figuring that out, because they're like, well, wait a minute, he didn't even win. Aaron Judge in 2017 at Marlins Park was second, the second most watched, and Prince Fielder at Busch Stadium was the third most watched. So I don't know.
Prince Fielder makes sense because you remember his dad who came over from came back from Japan and went to that Tigers team and was just hitting dingers left and right.
But look at this. So from 92 to 2000, here were the winners.
Oh boy.
Mark McGwire, yep. Juan Gonzalez, Ken Griffey Jr., Frank Thomas, Barry Bonds, Tino Martinez, Ken Griffey Jr., Ken Griffey Jr., Sammy Sosa.
Tino Martinez is the outlier
in
there.
Yeah, he sneaks in there, but he was on those good Yankee teams, though, at least. But, man, I mean, that was – and some of those parks, too. You know, obviously, Griffey in 99 winning it at Fenway. Griffey also won it when they were last at Coors Field in 98, and that's when everybody was, you know – Andres Galarraga is chasing 400. Vinny Castilla is hitting 40 dingers. Like, the ball was flying out of Coors Field back in the back
in the 90s. And there were so many at that time because of all those, because of all the irregularities, like you said, in the different ballparks.
How about this? So doing a little history of the Home Run Derby.
Yeah.
1988, canceled due to rain.
It's about right.
It rained out. Home Run Derby.
Pain.
Rained out in 88. Like, we're not going to do it. We can't do it.
They turned to Chris Berman. Chris,
we don't want to do
fill
it.
Fill the hours.
We don't want to do it.
So if I gave you the top eight home run hitters in baseball, now there's a cluster at eight. So I'll pick the local guy,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, Devers, right?
If it were Ohtani, Vlad Jr., Tatis Jr., Kyle Schwarber, Joey Gallo, Ronald Acuna, I know he's hurt.
Yeah,
Matt Olson. And Rafael Devers.
Oh, my God.
Way better.
Much better.
Right?
That's where you can really rally people. If you're telling me little Vladdy and little Tatis are all going to be in there, and I know, again, Acuna's hurt, but let's say he wasn't, yes. Oh, my God. Because there's always going to be like a stiff that's in there. Remember the year Jason Bay was in it and he hit none? And you're like, all right, this guy out of here.
Was that his 2 years here or part of his year here
might have been even before they got him.
When he was with the Pirates.
I forget,
then.
But they're like, and Jason Bay. Because you're not going to get all of the eight best home run hitters to be a part of it. But the personalities and the swings, like if you got Vladdy Guerrero in there or Tatis, yeah, it's must watch at that point.
I have a ton of, like, Fernando Tatis Jr., he's signing jerseys. There was a kid at the San Diego game over the weekend who had was holding a sign.
Yeah.
And it checked off. It said, heart transplant, come to see the Padres, get a picture with Fernando Tatis Jr. Tatis Jr. walked right over to the kid,
awesome.
Grabbed him, mm-hmm. signed his thing, took a picture with him. Like, he gets it.
That There's would be,
a,
yeah.
It's the kind of thing that if you're Major League Baseball,
right.
that's the kind of dude you should be leaning on and be like, you need to be in this.
100%. And I know some of them don't want to do it. They think it messes up their swing. There's the year that Bobby Abreu hit like a million, and then like in the second half, he hit like two dingers.
That guy.
Yeah, I mean, they're just saying. Like, some guys don't want to be in it. But, yeah, if you could come up with your – let's say everybody was healthy for this year.
Yep.
It would be Ohtani still.
Yep.
It'd
Guerrero.
Be Vlad. It'd be Tatis. It'd be Acuna. It'd be Mike Trout. It'd be Bryce Harper.
Oh, I forgot about Trout.
I mean, maybe Betts. I know he's not like a. I'm just saying, like, you want star players in there.
What about Judge? 21
oh,
home
yeah.
runs.
Yep.
Okay.
And Judge. Right. Like, those would probably be your best guy, your best chance to sort of market stars. You got all different. You know, size guys, different swings, you know, righty lefties. Like, you want all that stuff in there.
Why not dangle a ton of dough in front of these guys?
Uh-huh.
Especially those young guys. Like, not that, you know, look, they grew up with dads of big leaguers. It's not like those juniors that we mentioned are necessarily hurting for money and they're legit big leaguers. But, you know, I'm surprised somebody hasn't come along and been like, hey, listen, I'll put up $5 million to the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the best. Like, if you're a sponsor, I'll give you $5 million. Give me the best home run derby you can come up with.
Right.
And I wonder if that, again, I always say throw money at the problem when it comes to something like this. It's like the dunk contest and the 3-point shootout.
Yeah.
If you gave somebody $5 million for winning the dunk contest, you'd get eight damn good dunkers that we would all be hot and horny for to be able to watch in that contest. Don't forget to follow on Twitter at Keefe21, at The Real Gresh, at Gresh Keefe. And tomorrow, WEEI.com, the Dork Podcast, will be ready to go for you. We touched on it a little bit earlier. Is this it for the draw and the fighter that is Conor McGregor? That's next.
Online or over.
over the air, we don't care. Just make us your new midday habit. Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
You said it right there. You said do the rematch, right? He said he thinks the rivalry isn't over. Do you feel that way, that the rivalry isn't over?
The fight didn't get finished. You know, you can't have a fight finished that way. You know, we'll see how this whole thing plays out. Who knows how long Conor's out, so Poirier will do his thing until Conor's ready.
You said it. I mean, obviously, that's the fight to make, the title fight. Did you speak to Charles or Dustin? Like, any idea, like, how soon they'd like to fight?
No.
That's Dana White.
No.
After UFC 264, and yeah, I went and we talked about that, but Conor McGregor got hurt, and look, let's just be real. Conor McGregor is one of the biggest draws in sports. Whether he is in a faux fight against Floyd Mayweather or getting into the octagon, when Conor McGregor shows up, it is big business. But it was built on two things. The guy really could fight and he could talk. And now, Keith, there are many more people who think that Conor McGregor is nothing more than talk but can't fight anymore. He's going to run it back against Poirier a fourth time. However, is the shine coming off of Conor McGregor just yet, or are we not there?
I think it is when you're talking about where it was at its peak, where not only was he the best talker, and he may remain the best talker until the end of his career, but he was also the best fighter. And so I think that combination is going to be hard to bring back. And he's still going to be a guy that most people want to watch, but the fact that it's not always going to be a title fight, it's not always going to be against the best guy at whatever weight class that it was before, I think it's tough to go back to those days, like when he was fighting Aldo, and there was even talk at one point about, could he win three different weight classes?
That's right, yeah.
Like, if he beat Nate Diaz in his first fight, wasn't there the thought, like Robbie Lawler or like one of those guys who's going to fight maybe next and like win three different belts? But he lost that one, and that kind of changed things a little bit. So I still think he's the biggest box office draw, but I think it can only go down from where it was with him.
Well, if you look at the pay-per-view buys over, you know, since we've hit 2000, right? And you look...
Do we have the results for this past one yet?
Not yet. There are rumblings, though, that it's going to push 100 million in terms of buys. The last McGregor pay-per-view, I do believe, was it like $65 million or something like that? Like, it's big money. But here you go.
Yeah.
So there are really two people that cause us to buy pay-per-views. Floyd Mayweather. Mm-hmm. Mayweather Pacquiao did $4.6 million. Mayweather McGregor did $4.3 million in pay-per-view buys. Khabib versus McGregor, UFC 229, did $2.4 million pay-per-view buys.
Right.
Diaz McGregor 2 is on that list at 1.6. Poirier McGregor 2, 1.6 million is on that list. If it's either Floyd Mayweather or Conor McGregor,
that's it.
They're pushing people to pay-per-view. Otherwise, everyone else is getting left in the dust.
But so see, like, the one that was far and away the best one for buys for McGregor,
yes,
was Khabib, who at that point you could say, all right, is this the two best fighters? They obviously did a great job leading up to the whole thing, the event, like McGregor's guys. You didn't know what was real, what was fake. They did a really good job promoting that. But also there was the allure of there's nobody better than these guys.
Right.
Whereas now, if it's just the talking part of it, but, you know, you have a harder time justifying it being the main event and things like that. Like, he's not there yet. Don't get me wrong. This isn't BJ Penn losing a bunch of fights and out there. And he's not there.
And he's going to go away for a while that it's the whole, how could I forget you if you don't go away? If he's gone for a year and then he bursts back onto the scene, then it's going to be a big number.
But he's lost three of his last four fights, and the one win in there was against Cowboy Cerrone, who I give that guy all the credit in the world. But again, all right. Like, you know, what was that, a welterweight bout?
To show the draw of McGregor, Cowboy Cerrone is clearly on the back nine of his career. And in the beginning of 2020, they did 1.35 million pay-per-view buys, mm-hmm. not because people wanted to see Cowboy. With all due respect to Cowboy Cerrone.
No, and he had fought 3 months earlier. Like, that's just how he is. Like, he's always fighting, like, right away.
That was his retirement gift from the UFC.
And by the
I
way,
think.
He's lost like he lost his last like, five fights or whatever. That's my point. And so you're like, all right, where is he? Where is Connor at? I think people are still going to pay for his fights. Don't get me wrong. And what is he, 30? How old is he? 30? He's only 32.
Oh, he's only 32. He's not toast by any stretch. By the way, speaking to Khabib, did you see the Khabib tweet after Poirier won?
Oh, yeah.
The, good always triumphs over evil. I mean, he can't.
Pretty good.
He can't help himself.
But so is that what people want? Is McGregor Poirier 4?
I think people were left like with an empty feeling out of this fight.
You break your leg. Like, it's not,
right.
That sucks the way that it went.
And for both of them, like, why not run it back? If you're Dustin Poirier, you want to fight Conor McGregor as many times as you can.
He does. But, like, with the UFC, because wasn't there even talk about, like, a Diaz trilogy fight or whatever?
Well, and,
like,
I think there's that.
Somebody else.
Here's the thing. If Poirier wins the title, right, because he's going to get a title shot now.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wins it and some thought, oh, Khabib sent that tweet out of a stamp of approval on Dustin Poirier, and it would all, because Khabib said, want me to retire, and he does the whole, if my mother say it's okay, it's okay. I wonder if Poirier wins the title, if that might bring Khabib out. To be like, hey, look at what I can do with this guy on pay-per-view, and the whole take the title back, all that sort of stuff. And it's a, hey, you were worth me coming out of retirement to fight you kind of thing. So and that would do big box office, too. There's no question.
Because isn't their current lightweight, not to get too in the weeds, but isn't their current lightweight champ also like a featherweight? Like he fights both or something, I think?
I do. A lot of those guys, it's not a big difference. So for them, what, 7-8 pounds, whatever.
But it's are you defending a belt here, going for a belt there? Like it just slows down the whole thing. And that's why Dana comes in with the interim titles. And you're like, all
right. It's the paycheck, right? Israel Adesanya moved up to fight, I think it was Juan Błachowicz. Because they were like, we need a fight, and here's a bunch of money. He's like, okay, I'll go up in a weight class, and who cares if he loses, because the guy's dominant in his division. Coming up, do we have an issue with the All-Star game? Does anybody care about the All-Star game? The Red Sox are at the halfway point, and might the NFL Sunday ticket change? You don't realize how much a change in something like that would really affect you until you hear that you might have to do it online. Final hour, Gresh and Keefe next.